mix. A super long-distance intercontinental multi-stage ballistic rocket was launched a few days ago, the Soviet Union announced during the last week of August 1957. The news didn't come as a surprise to Pentagon officials, who'd secretly monitored the test flight with help from a radar station in Iran. But the announcement 6 weeks later that the Soviets had placed the first man-made satellite into orbit caught the United States off guard and created a sense of panic among the American people. Sputnik 1 was a metallic sphere about the size of a beach ball that could do little more than circle the Earth and transmit a radio signal of beep, beep. Nevertheless, it gave the Soviet Union a huge propaganda victory. It created the impression that the first socialist society had surpassed the United States in missile technology and scientific expertise. The successful launch of Sputnik 2 on November 3, 1957, seemed even more ominous. The new satellite weighed about half a ton. Rocket engines with enough thrust to lift that sort of payload could be used to deliver a nuclear warhead. Sputnik 2 also carried the first animal to orbit the Earth, a small dog named Laika, evidence that the Soviet Union was planning to put a man in space. Although the Soviets boasted that Laika lived for a week in orbit, wearing a little space suit, housed in a pressurized compartment with an ample supply of food and water, she actually died within a few hours of liftoff. Democrats in Congress whipped up fears of Soviet missiles and attacked the Eisenhower administration for allowing the United States to fall behind. The Democratic Advisory Council said that President Eisenhower had weakened the free world and starved the national defense. Henry Scoop Jackson, a Democratic senator from Washington, called Sputnik a devastating blow to U.S. prestige. Lyndon Baines Johnson, the Senate Majority Leader, scheduled hearings to investigate what had gone wrong with America's defense policies. Johnson's staff director, George Reedy, urged him to plunge heavily into the missile controversy, suggesting that it could blast the Republicans out of the water, unify the Democratic Party, and elect you president. Another Democratic senator, John F. Kennedy, later accused Eisenhower of putting fiscal security ahead of national security and made the existence of a missile gap one of the central issues in his presidential campaign. The Democratic effort to create anxiety about a missile gap was facilitated by Nikita Khrushchev, first secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. In a series of public comments over the next few years, Khrushchev belittled the American military and bragged about his nation's technological achievements. The United States does not have an intercontinental missile, otherwise it would also have easily launched a satellite of its own. Now we are capable of directing a rocket to any part of the Earth, and if need be, with a hydrogen warhead. It is not a mere figure of speech when we say we have organized serial production of intercontinental ballistic rockets. Let the people abroad know it. I am making no secret of this, that in 1 year 250 missiles with hydrogen warheads came off the assembly line in the factory we visited. The territory of our country is immense. We have the possibility of dispersing our rocket facilities, of camouflaging them well. 200 rockets are sufficient to destroy England, France, and Germany, and 300 rockets will destroy the United States. At the present time, the USSR has so many rockets that mass production has been curtailed, and only the newest models are under construction. Khrushchev had condemned Stalin's crimes in 1956, released political prisoners, gained a reputation as a reformer, and proposed a ban on nuclear weapons in Central Europe. But he'd also ordered Soviet troops to invade Hungary and overthrow its government. More than 20,000 Hungarian citizens were killed by the Red Army, and hundreds more were later executed. The thought of Khrushchev in command of so many long-range missiles seemed chilling. President Eisenhower tried to calm the hysteria about Soviet missiles and address the criticism that his administration had become passive, timid, and out of touch. He felt confident that large increases in defense spending were unnecessary, and that the Strategic Air Command had more than enough nuclear weapons to deter the Soviet Union. He was particularly irritated by a secret report submitted to him during the first week of November. A high-level committee led by H. Rowan Gaither, a former president of the Ford Foundation, called for tens of billions of dollars to be spent on new missile programs and a nationwide system of fallout shelters. Eisenhower thought that the Gaither Committee had an exaggerated view of the Soviet threat. In a televised speech on November 7, 1957, Eisenhower stressed that there was no reason to panic. The military strength of the free world was much greater than that of the communists. It misses the whole point to say that we must now increase our expenditures on all kinds of military hardware and defense, he said, with frustration. The speech had little effect. On the morning of November 25th, Lyndon Johnson opened the Senate hearings by asserting that we have slipped dangerously behind the Soviet Union in some very important fields, and an influential newspaper columnist described the Gaither Report as just about the grimmest warning in American history. While working in the Oval Office that day, Eisenhower had a stroke and suddenly found himself unable to speak. A week and a half later, a Vanguard rocket carrying America's first man-made satellite was launched at Cape Canaveral, Florida, before hundreds of reporters and a live television audience. The Vanguard rose about 4 feet into the air, hesitated, fell back to the launch pad, and exploded. The Pentagon had good reason to be concerned about the Soviet Union's long-range missiles, regardless of the actual number. A Soviet bomber would approach the United States at about 500 miles per hour, and the warhead of a Soviet missile would come at about 16,000 miles per hour. With luck, a bomber might be shot down, but no technology yet existed to destroy a nuclear warhead mid-flight. And a missile attack would give the United